And I see that there's a lot of applications, but I got to tell you, you got to get this in theaters' hands. This needs to be the standard of theater.
Yeah, and we were actually approached by the Danish Royal Theater because they saw us in a TV broadcast and they're like, how can we get this? How can we work with this?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to immerse yourselves in the American Immersion Theater Podcast with your hosts, Scott Crampton and Anessa Johnson.
Greetings, Immersioneers. I'm Scott, the Maverick of Immersion Crampton, and this is my co-host.
I'm Anessa, Experiential Theater Fairy Godmother Johnson. Welcome to On Acting, the American Immersion Theater Podcast. On this show, we teach you to be a better actor.
But to be a better actor, you have to realize it's not just about acting.
It's about interacting.
So sit back and relax as we teach you the American Immersion Theater method. And today, we get to talk to somebody about one of Scott's favorite subjects that's not many artists' favorite subjects, which is guns.
Yay!
And we have somebody here, and I am so bad at pronouncing names, but Anessa's so, so good.
Yes, we have with us Daniel Karpenshoff.
It's time for some special guests. They're like your hosts, only they're not terrible. Terrible like Scott and Anessa.
Did I say that right, Daniel? That'd be really embarrassing.
Said it perfectly.
She's professional. She's a professional, Daniel.
Now, Daniel is from Copenhagen Industries, which is a research and development company. They work on innovations for special effects within the entertainment industry. Most notably, they have a patent-pending flash muzzle on fake but very, very realistic firearms. So that's one of the biggest things we'll be talking about today.
Yes. Yeah, so before we get letters, complaints, or something like that, I understand that guns have become a distasteful thing in theater, in the industry at times. But what Daniel has been doing is he is making a safer fake gun.
Mm-hmm.
And guns are the fireworks of the theater world. They are obviously necessary in a tremendous amount of movies. But in the theater world, it's about it's about how can we do it in a cool way that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's a whole glorifying guns conversation. But right now, I'm just going to kid out and talk about how dang cool this is. So, Daniel, let's start with, tell us about what you've done and how you are safe-defying the industry of fake violence.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this. Copenhagen Industries is sort of a brainchild between my co-founder, Søren Haraldsted, and myself. Søren has been working with special effects and pyrotechnics on all sorts of different productions, be it, you know, live action stage plays, film, TV, you name it. And he's been doing this for many, many years. And we've known each other for almost as many and been very good friends and so on and so forth. And at some point, we were sort of, let's do this together. And why weapons? Why guns? Because we don't believe in them, but we do believe in safety. And we do believe in great entertainment and great culture. And when it comes to guns, it's one of those things that are just prohibitively dangerous and prohibitively expensive and cumbersome to work with. And whether that's, you know, live plays or immersion theater or TV production or feature film, it really doesn't matter. Guns today, as they're used, are either replicas, in which case they don't really perform as you would want them to, or yeah, they're actual weapons, in which case they're just dangerous.
Yes. And I want to tell me right now what the industry is generally using in film and TV so that everybody knows.
Yeah. So, you know, unbeknownst to many, the industry today use real firearms, and they're either blank firing weapons designed to be blank firing weapons, or they're actual arms material that has been modified to fire blanks. And which of those two are the most dangerous is hard to say, or the most cumbersome to work with or jam the most, but they're not designed for this use case. They're not designed for entertainment. And inherently, real weapons will never be real safe.
No, there's always a mistake, and because there's so much of it, right? Like, it's not like it happens twice or happens three times. These things are happening thousands of times. If I walk for, like, if I walk all year, I'm going to trip like 30, 40 times. And that's just me putting 2 feet in front of me, you know?
Right. I mean, how many times do you bite down on a fork, right? And you've done that many, many times.
Yeah.
And you really don't want to bite down on a fork if you know, the fork is a fully automatic rifle pointing towards a colleague.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we there are cases in which it's gone incredibly tragic. Everybody, of course, can remember the Crow. Losing him way too early. I'm blanking horrifyingly on his name.
Brandon Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
God, I came up with it just as you. But like, that was an example of using real firearms. It was accidentally loaded, and he just got killed. He got killed on camera doing his job of, you know, fake violence. So I can tell you what we use, and I'd like you to tell us how this is going to be better and more immersive, because I know it is. It's kind of a loaded question. So what we use right now, we do use a replica gun. It can never actually be fired because essentially it doesn't really have a nozzle. It has a piece of metal that's it was never real, essentially. So we use a replica from Collector's Armory. And Ness actually is the one who purchases those.
I do, yeah.
And he, what it really comes down to is it's kind of a modified cap gun. It's like a bigger cap gun. It's a cap gun. If every time you fired a cap, you lost a dollar. And you can't, you could get injured with it, but it's very difficult. It's basically, it makes a loud sound and it blows smoke, but it doesn't blow it out the muzzle. It blows it up top. So. Right. It creates very little, there's no flash to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. So how is yours different right now?
So ours is very different and yet very similar. Our weapons are not actual weapons either. They're replicas. Mm-hmm. We have them, we source them from a partner that we have. It turns out, this is really random, but one of the largest manufacturers in the world of replica guns is just north of Copenhagen.
Oh, that's very bizarre because, like, isn't Copenhagen one of the safest places in the world?
Like we discovered that there's this odd correlation, sort of inverse correlation between the amount of real guns in circulation in a society and how difficult it is to get a replica. So in the United States, there are a lot of real weapons, real firearms, which makes it really difficult to get replicas.
That's very, very true. Yeah, we've only found really one place that we get them from overall. And that's Collector's Armory, to give them a fast plug. And that's probably somebody you could eventually work with, cost prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, we get these replicas. We retrofit them with our technology. As you say, it's patent pending and so on and so forth. And it's an electronically controlled mixture of propane and oxygen. So it's like a little welding torch. And that mixes in this combustion chamber. We call it the Burninator. Then we 3D print it in steel. And then it ignites with the cadence of that particular weapon because it's computerized. So you end up having this very true to life looking muzzle flash at the end of the gun. You get the bang, you get the flash, you get smoke, you get everything you want, but with a safety distance of, we say, 20 centimeters, as you know, recommended about a foot. Mm-hmm. But you can actually shoot like point blank up close. And we do that all the time to make sure that there are no fragments, there's no debris, there's nothing. It's literally just a advanced computerized crème brûlée torch.
And it never could injure somebody because it can never fire a bullet. There's no scenario.
Exactly.
There's also another thing to talk about here, and Ness has a few questions as well, but I'm not allowed to reveal the source of this production at all, but I will say that I have a person that I know who is working on a production that will remain nameless, and he was putting together kind of a science fiction weapon, but he forgot that they were using a CO2 tank, I believe, to create the firing mechanism for it, and he had to weld something on it. He forgot to remove the CO2 tank, and he blew it up, and he lost his hand. Or her. I don't want to specify at all. It's very sensitive information, but I wanted to create for the people that it's not just the brand and the actor scenario. What we're working with is there people are creating workarounds that are just as dangerous. And that is terrifying as well. CO2 is hyper dangerous, especially when you're using like the concept that you'd have a tank like that and then it would be right next to a blowtorch. But a lot of times the incidents you don't hear about are on smaller sets.
You rarely hear about it. And, you know, there are some really tragic incidents. And fortunately, loss of life is pretty rare. It does happen. It's about once a year, which is one too many.
Absolutely.
All the, you know, the fringe cases, the you know, the loss of hearing, the loss of sight, the loss of a finger. And they're really tragic. And really, no one should. And that's sort of my personal belief and what we believe at the company. No one should go to work in the morning fearing for their safety when they're creating anything, let alone entertainment or culture.
And to say it to our listeners and say it to everybody, we do use cap guns very frequently. We run a murder mystery group, obviously is one of the things. We don't use them as frequently in our princess shows.
Not really.
But we run it because it's important. It's one of the things. And honestly, if you're thinking violence, you know, yes, you can poison somebody, but strangling somebody is more violent than shooting somebody. There's a lot of other ways to kill somebody that is graphically more violent than just being shot on stage or something like that. These are the fireworks of the industry. And I want to be clear, though, for all of our viewers, because we are talking about guns here. We have never, ever brought a blank gun or a working gun to anything. And I would never allow that.
And even though they don't fire, we also refuse to point them at anybody. It's always over their heads, over shoulders, like nowhere near their faces or bodies.
There's an entire industry right now that is. And I always fear, because there's so much fringe theater out there, that somebody's going to take that and be like, oh, blank guns, which are so dangerous.
Just blanks are not safe. Like there's this sort of common misconception that it, you know, it's a blank. I've checked the chamber. There's no, as you know, was the case with Brendan Lee. There was a live bullet, a live round in the chamber, and so, and even if it's just a blank, just in quotation mark, they're dangerous. Blanks are inherently dangerous. You have, you know, you have gunpowder residue. You have a blast. You have a significant amount of energy that is being released, and even if everything goes according to plan, they're still dangerous. So it's one of those, like, people are lulled into believing that because it's a blank, it's safe. It's not. They're dangerous.
So what was it that inspired you to create this weapon? Was there like an experience that kind of made you think that this needs to change? We need something different? Or was it just something in the back of your mind? Like, how did you get that inspiration and how'd you get started?
Yeah, so my background is in startups. It's in entrepreneurship. I used to be a screenwriter for a brief period of time, and worked with President Obama on entrepreneurship and what have you.
Oh,
so
awesome!
The actual idea.
I've heard of him.
I know, right? Like he's awesome. I mean, today makes you long for like the.
Yes. We don't talk much politics on here, but there was a different time.
There was a different time. So the actual idea actually came from Søren, my partner, and what prompted him to it was he was special effects coordinator on this you know, epic World War II drama about the Danish resistance movement, and they were shooting in the Czech Republic. And because they're using real firearms, because you are when you're creating, you know, World War II dramas, you have these historic assault rifles, and he was in charge of shipping them from Copenhagen to Prague. And they go down there, they do the shoot, everything turns out great, meaning no one gets hurt, and the movie turns out fine.
Yay.
And he comes back, exactly, yay. comes back, and everything's fine. He's, you know, time goes by, the movie's released, and some Saturday morning, like, it knocks on his door. Like, it's a Saturday morning, he's hungover, he's walking around in his undies in his suburban apartment in Copenhagen, and there are two uniformed cops outside, and he's like, yeah, I can help you. And they look at it, and I should say, Søren is a scrawny little spitfuck. he does not look threatening to anyone. He's a special person, right? And they look at him, they go, we know this sounds weird, but Interpol has a warrant for your arrest for arms trafficking.
Wow.
And he looks at them and he goes, "You got to be kidding me." And they're like, "No, we sounded weird too, because obviously you have, you know, you work with this stuff, but mm-hmm. we actually have to bring you in." So he goes, he texts with them to the station. He, you know, gives explanation. Everything is squared away. It's cleared up. It was a misunderstanding. But after the shoot, like 2 years earlier, the Czech border guard forgot to like fax in the piece of paper that cleared the shipment,
wow.
meaning that 12 crates of historic assault rifles went missing with Cern's name on it.
Oh my gosh.
And at that point, he was like, "Well, Jesus effing Christ, this is ridiculous. Like, we've been spending 6 months, three guys full time on clearing this shipment, yet it still goes wrong. This needs to change. Like, this yeah. this can't stand," kind of thing. We're mm-hmm. making movies. We're not waging war. We should not be working with arms material.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense that, like, I mean, literally, Avengers Endgame is using a real gun that's firing blanks. That is lunacy. We have this is a problem. Like, they say great entrepreneurship is about solving a problem. Mm-hmm. And I really do think you have solved a problem here.
Yeah.
And that's one reason we really did actually work on getting you onto this show. Mm-hmm. Even though I understand this is an On Acting podcast and it is different, but we do like to talk about the business of show business, and it is an actual problem. So we wanted to put out this episode to discuss, why is this happening? It's keeping more guns in circulation. It's keeping guns on set, which is a terrible place for guns. I can barely trust a craft cart on set, let alone a crate of guns. Like,
right.
If I'm like the bagels, everything bagels mine, that usually can't happen well. Like, just having like an everything bagel on a craft cart that's mine probably isn't going to work out. So having 18 crates of guns shouldn't work out. So the fact that they're doing that and we're shipping it everywhere, it makes no sense. Guns aren't even meant to ship everywhere. Let's just put that out there. They're not
meant for entertainment.
That.
They're not meant for any of this. It's just what we've been stuck with. You know, the reason why the Screen Actors Guild was founded in 1933, or one of the reasons, was you were firing, you know, live ammunition at the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the Screen Actors Guild was founded, and eventually you agreed that, you know, if you're going to use real weapons, at least don't use live rounds. Use blanks instead, just, you know, as a precaution.
a brief tip of how acting used to be.
I know, right? But since then, nothing has really changed, right? So, like, we're still using real weapons. We're still using blanks. One of our senior advisors, Michael Salomon, he's a two-time Academy Award nominee cinematographer for, like, Backdraft and James Cameron's The Abyss, and he went on to direct, and so he directed Band of Brothers, and they were shooting in Bulgaria, and they were shipping 60 crates of weapons from the United States to Bulgaria, and obviously Bulgaria was like, "No, you can't," and they were like, "But we need to do this TV series, it's a big deal," and they're like, "You can't." I mean, legally speaking, they're bringing in 150 people on the crew and the cast and 60 crates of, legally and technically, it's an invasion of the country. So obviously Bulgaria is like, "No, this is not working."
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And eventually Michael called Steven Spielberg, who called Tony Blair, who called the Prime Minister of Bulgaria, and that's what it required for them to actually do Band of Brothers.
It's ridiculous.
Because you're using real weapons, and it's just
that's
one of those.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to be Steven Spielberg. One thing that we talk a lot about here is accessibility, and I really, this is more of a Scott interview than a Nessa one because I'm so into this concept. I have fought the guns are fireworks concept in theater for a long time. I believe in that wholeheartedly. I think that I've been to some shows that are just fantastic with the use of guns. So it's a tough thing because I actually don't own a real gun. I own probably 55 replica guns, not including what we have here in headquarters. So, like, I just own a ton of guns. I own, you know, an axe gun. I own tons of different replica guns, but I'm very against real guns, which is, I know, kind of a contradiction because I love the idea of playing with guns and making guns something that people don't necessarily, I don't want you to not fear guns, but I also don't want you to lose sleep over the idea of guns. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's this kind of contradiction, but we are getting into this brave new immersive world. And one, I want to make sure that we keep blank guns out of it. That's incredibly important. One reason we want you to be on. But two, I want to be able to add guns in a safe way, letting people know. There's things like, let's just throw out a McCabe Manor, which you is, if you're only in New York half the time and in Copenhagen, you may not have heard of, but they're basically like a survival thing. So you go to McCabe Manor and it's such an extreme haunted house. They're dunking you in water. You end up bloody and it's pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the things that are less fringy than that, that people are doing, like, I want to live inside your mouth. Terrible name. No offense, guys, but terrible name. But great show where it's a horror-based survival type immersion experience, and being able to add guns that feel real to it would give people something. It's the idea that they'd feel more truly alive, that they would get that kind of startle. Not unsimilar to like Fight Club, which I know I'm really going off on a tangent
here,
but
to talk about that.
Oh yeah, sorry. But the idea of Fight Club is just you don't feel you can't live completely terrified all the time. You to be able to get into a fight means something. You'll survive that. This would allow this kind of technology that you're inventing, you're groundswelling right now, would allow theater to take this realm to something that is, one, safer, which is significantly better, and two, just more realistic, which would have this incredible effect from a customer experience. And again, if you're a person that is survived gun shooting or something like that, you're just simply not going to this.
No.
I'm not suggesting that we drop immersion theater elements of guns into people's homes when they don't know it.
No surprise fake shootings.
But I'm suggesting that there is a market for this kind of thing. And people want to say, like, I've been part of this. I can experience this almost in a therapeutic way. And I think you'd allow people to do that. So tell us about where you're going to be, where this is headed, when people might be able to get this into their hands, and, you know, what you're going to do with this, because we're excited for the future of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that you're excited makes me even more excited. I mean, we have focused on a couple of different things. One being obviously safety.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the core of the product. On top of that, there's just, because it's inherently safe, because of that safety, we don't need the same level of permits and license, so on and so forth. It reduces cost, which lowers the barrier to entry for a lot of storytellers to work with these devices. And that's really personally what excites me the most. I'm not a big believer in guns, but I am a huge fan of storytelling in whichever medium, shape, or form it comes in, whether it's immersion theater or whether it's live action role play or it's feature film or TV. And weapons and firearms are concentrated conflict. Like, at its core, that's what they represent. And conflict is a part of all storytelling.
Yeah,
right?
It's the basis of theater. And it's exciting. It's okay that it's exciting. You know,
exactly.
It's okay. I mean, it's okay that you go through a haunted house and you're scared.
Totally.
It's kind of the point. Yeah.
So what we really want to do is revolutionize the industry, and we call it revolutionize the industry of conflict. That sounds like warfare, but the industry of conflict is storytelling, and that's really where we want to become the new go-to standard for all sorts of media storytelling, basically. And, you know, because it's been so difficult and it's been so expensive to work with firearms as plot devices, only the, you know, the most successful, the best one, or the ones with biggest budget have had the ability to actually use them in telling their stories.
So we're allowing art right now. We're allowing people to have art as something that can happen more. Like, I said that terribly. We're allowing art to be in everybody's hands. This is getting, while it may be a different kind of paintbrush that people don't use. Right now, we have had such a revolution that, you know, my phone is a better camera than 90% of what things were shot on from 1920 to like 1980. You know, it's insane that that's true, but that's super true. So we've allowed that for everybody to have that. But this is still an exclusivity thing. And I love industries that are breaking down exclusivity things. Yeah. I can tell you right now, you would have a customer in us when this happens.
He was talking about it before we started today. Like, I want to buy one right now.
Yeah, I do want to buy one right now. Now, you are still in, you said, kind of a finalization and a funding round. Yeah. So it's something you guys have created and you're trying to make more accessible. And that's completely fine. A lot of industries are in that. But you do have a few active working ones that you can see on the website. And they are incredible. Mm-hmm. And the two things I want to say, because I haven't heard you say them, one, from your mouth, there is no After Effects involved in this, correct?
There's no After Effects. And,
perfect.
And actually our mantra is, bring all shots in camera again. Like, we don't believe in CGI. CGI is whack. Bring all shots in camera again and then shoot your story. Yeah.
And if After Effects works, guys, Avengers would have just used After Effects. No, they're using a lot of things because After Effects doesn't work that well for firearms. It just doesn't look the same. Mm-hmm. It doesn't because it changes the lighting in the room. It always looks fake. So that, and then the other thing that I haven't heard you say is not classified as a weapon.
Not classified as a
weapon.
Not
classified as a weapon.
Exactly.
Huge. Huge
it's,
thing.
It's a big deal. Yeah,
it is.
It's not classified as a weapon. Everything's in camera. And, you know, even if you manage to make CGI look great, it's a terrible experience on set. Like, cast on set and it's an intense scene, obviously, because if it was not an intense scene, there would be no shooting. It's an intense scene. And as it is today, either it's, you know, you add in a post, in which case, you know, the talent is standing there and going pew, 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 nothing happens. Even worse, the talent is on set with a real weapon in his or her hand. And while trying to act out this incredibly intense and transformative scene, have to keep the back of the head, do not point this thing at anyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That does not spell great storytelling.
It doesn't.
It does not spell great acting.
And it spells impossible storytelling for theater. Impossible. There's no After Effects that's live.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So while I know you're focused on the film world, and that is fair because this is a, you know, you don't launch a company and have also Walmart pricing to start. You know, everybody understands that inherently. So I understand going after the big people. I'm sure Spielberg would have rather say, we're going to send I'm not calling anybody, just send over three more crates of the Violetta. Is that correct? Or am I saying it wrong?
The Violet.
Violet.
Yeah.
I'm, again, terrible at pronouncing things. I can't read or write. That's a fun fact. But the Violet, and rather than calling a prime minister.
Right.
I see that there's a lot of applications, but I got to tell you, you got to get this in theater's hands. This needs to be the standard of theater.
Yeah, and we were actually approached by the Danish Royal Theater because they saw us in a TV broadcast and they're like, how can we get this? How can we work with this? And if we're willing to come by and give a demo, and we're like, sure. And you know, we packed the car and we had a couple of assault rifles and drove over there and showcased it on stage, and they're like, this is outrageous. This means that the productions that we act like we nixed productions because the scene was such a particular of such a particular importance, and we could not pull it off because it just wouldn't work with a cap gun, or it just wouldn't work the way it's in, like the intensity wouldn't have been there.
It prohibits art. We are without this product. It literally. I want to be clear. You're not paying me, and I don't normally go this over the top with a certain thing, but this, if you can get this at a reasonable price for people, this will become something that stops That allows artists to do what they wish to do without being prohibited and going through corporations, begging for sponsorship, begging for things
exactly.
to
Definitely.
Be able to tell this story they want to tell. And in this day and age, isn't there a lot of stories with guns right now? We always just think of the gratuitous, you know, Rambo kind of scenes. But what about the scenes of gun violence that have changed a lot of people's lives?
Exactly.
And you never get to feel that in theater.
No.
So you're just hearing it, but to be able to, and again, that could be very graphic for some people, but it also could be very transformative for some people.
Totally.
And that's a
and
big
it's
deal.
And what society is built on. You know, when did we start caring about Wanda? 20 years too late, but when Hotel Wanda came out. When did we start remembering the Holocaust and Schindler's List? Those stories couldn't be told, have been told without firearms. Firearms is an innate part of human history, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's how it is. And looking at society today, if we want to paint a dystopian picture of what the world is moving towards, if that's what we want to portray, firearms is going to be a part of it. And that's unfortunate, but it's a part of our history and our culture. And if art can't reflect that in a way that makes sense, that is authentic, that is cheap and safe, we have a real problem. And that's really what we're trying to achieve. We try to lower the barrier to entry for storytellers in such a way that even the narrow audience ones, the important ones, are the ones that are actually being told. And we may today laugh at Rambo saying, oh, it's gratuitous violence. But I watched the first Rambo for the first time in my life about 3 weeks ago. And because my idea of Rambo had been gratuitous violence and, you know, just for the sake of violence. But the first Rambo is actually an anti-war movie.
Yeah,
portraying
most of them are.
War comics, actually, exactly. So, you know, it's an important film. Whether we like gratuitous violence or not, it's an important film. So is Godfather, you know. So violence for the sake of violence, we might not like it, but it's a part of who we are. It's a part of art. It's a part of culture. And it's really important that we can portray it in a way that actually makes sense for everyone.
Yep.
Definitely. There are some stories you just really can't tell without it. Like, you can't talk about something that involves immense amounts of violence without showing any of it whatsoever and just be like, well, trust me, guys, it was scary. Like, that's not going to work in a movie.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go into 3 minutes to win it.
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
All right. So this is our rapid fire guess question game where you have 3 minutes to answer as many questions as you can.
Okay.
Now, Anessa will be timing it. And what does he win?
If you win, I will personally test the safety of every single stage and film weapon up close and personal.
All right.
I'm not accident prone at all, so this will go real well. Also, I'm timing, so it'll be real fair.
All right. So are you ready, Daniel?
I'm ready.
Okay. All right. We just wasted 10 seconds there. All right. what is your personal favorite type of weapon?
AK-47.
Okay. What's your favorite non-gun weapon?
I don't know.
All right. What's the hardest
ballista.
Part? What's the hardest part of creating a weapon?
Knowing what all the different names are of them.
Okay. If you wrote a book about your life, what would it be called?
I want to do it again.
That's good. That's really good, actually. Mm-hmm. What's better, cats or dogs?
Cats.
What's your silliest fear?
Spiders and clowns.
If you could only... What about a spider clown?
Oh,
would
God.
That top it?
That sounds terrifying.
Spider clown? spider. If you could only eat one kind of food for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Tomatoes.
What is the best part of Copenhagen?
Oh, that's tricky. Copenhagen in the summer is unlike any other place on the planet. It's like New York in spring and fall. So
okay.
I'm going to go the summer.
All right. For viewers who don't have it, what's it like to have free healthcare?
Oh, it's fantastic, especially when trying to create something up from scratch.
If you could have a superpower, what would you choose?
See-through walls, I think.
Would you accept constant mind reading that you can't stop?
Oh, God, no.
If you were an animal, what would you be?
Cat.
If you were a Disney princess, which would you be?
A Disney princess?
Yes.
Ariel, I think, or Belle, but she's not technically a princess.
Name one thing we must see in Copenhagen.
I'm supposed to say Little Mermaid, but don't bother. I'm gonna go with drinking beer in the park because that's something I miss in New York.
All right, fair enough. And tell me one place I must eat in Copenhagen. Your favorite restaurant.
My favorite restaurant in Copenhagen. Tricky one, but there's a great barbecue, Texas barbecue place. So, you know, I don't know if it counts.
Funny to think about a Texas barbecue
Texas
place in Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me the best place to eat in New York.
Prosperity Dumplings.
30 okay. seconds left.
Which is better for food, New York or Copenhagen?
Oh, New York.
All right. What's your favorite word?
My favorite word?
Yes.
Encapsulated. I don't know why, but I really like the way it's pronounced.
Do you have a lucky token or item of clothing?
I don't.
Are you secretly a hitman?
I can't tell you. If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
And so time's up.
All right. You only have 35 questions left. Not too bad. all right, Daniel, great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We are going to just do a quick plug, and then we're going to let people tell how they can get a hold of you and learn more about what you're doing, which is incredibly exciting, in my opinion. All right. So we are American Immersion Theater. We normally don't just talk about guns, but we do talk a lot about theater and acting. If you are an actor and you're interested in being a part of the American Immersion Theater family, visit AIT.careers. That's AIT.careers, and you can sign up for our fall auditions, which we are in, you know, 25 places in America, including New York and not including Copenhagen, mm-hmm. Which Daniel is originally from. But maybe someday. We are going close, though. I'm actually getting on a plane tomorrow, and I will be performing like in Germany and England and some other places, but not Copenhagen.
Not
I want
Copenhagen.
To be. Or we are. No, we're probably in Brussels. That's as close as we're getting, I think.
Next, Copenhagen.
No, we'll try. We'll give it a shot. If there, we perform where U.S. military bases are for the military. So we'll see.
Oh, interesting.
All right. So you have you and your group have created something very, very cool. How can they learn more about it? How can they follow you?
Yeah, they can log on to cph.industries online and visit our website. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and so on and so forth. Just either CPH Industries as a handle or just search for Copenhagen Industries. And I'm actually going to be in New York in a few weeks.
Oh, nice.
And obviously happy to meet anyone. I'll probably be there May 18th to 25 or so. But cph.industries or write me daniel@cph.industries.
Excellent.
And we really are looking to engage with anyone who has an interest in this, whether it's cast or crew or producers or theaters or venues or directors or writers for that matter. We want to create the best possible tool for the industry. So input and feedback is incredibly important to us.
I will say I predict there will be a time in which you will be a very hard interview to get. So sometimes we talk to people on the way up and the way down and the middle. You sense on the way up, man. I love what you are doing. With
yes,
a capital
very
L.
Cool.
And that is a wrap. So this is Scott from American Immersion Theater reminding you that theater is a story about others.
American Immersion Theater is a story about you and guns. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
If you'd like to hear more about American Immersion Theater podcast, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. To be our friend and ask us questions on Facebook, just search American Immersion Theater. Finally, if you're looking to be a part of the AIT family, visit us at AIT.careers. That's AIT.careers. Thanks for listening, and remember, nail guns are dangerous.
All right, so let's start with this. Simple thing. How do you pronounce your last name?
Karpenchov.
Karpenchov. I don't even know how to phonetically spell Shoff. Shoff?